Hearing about Krishna
will solve all your problems.
What? How can it be that hearing about Krishna solves all my problems? Now, what do you think is your problem? What do you say, Graham? What do you think is your problem? Oh, this is a very good presentation of the problem. He doesn't think he knows Krishna very well. Any others? Danielle, what do you think is your problem? The same. Actually, everyone's problem is they've forgotten Krishna. And therefore, we think concentrating on my own activities is the highest thing. I want to be the enjoyer. How many ways can I enjoy? Let me meditate on my qualities, my activities, my form. People are not interested in religion because they have no attractive understanding of God. Basically, people think, you know, God is a pretty boring subject matter. My life is very exciting, or it will be very exciting. But God, what can God do that's enjoyable? Only when they hear about Krishna does the full truth dawn on them that my foolish activities are so tiny and insignificant, and Krishna's activities are so extraordinary and unlimited. By hearing about Krishna, as we always say, we understand that we are the supreme failures at enjoyment, and Krishna is the supreme success at unlimited enjoyment. We think we're happy if we can just... We think we're successful if we can just be happy for a few moments. Isn't that the way it is? Yeah, I had a good day last week. Yeah. That weekend was a good weekend for me. We're so cheap. And we're so proud. Just get a little bit of what we think is happiness and our head swells so much. Only when we hear about Krishna do we get some real humility. We can be beat on the head by material nature so many times and still we think, next time I'll be successful. But when we hear about Krishna, our false ego is deflated and we realize, I cannot compete with Krishna. Let me serve Krishna. But you'll never get that understanding unless you hear about Krishna. So it is Krishna that is the problem. We have forgotten Krishna. We have lost contact with Krishna. We are insensitive to Krishna. Now, what are the things that you like to do in your life? You like to be surrounded by loving family. Doesn't everyone here? Whether you had it or not, wouldn't you like to have a loving family around you? A mother and father who just lavished attention on you? Wouldn't you like to grow up in a neighborhood where everybody took care of you and everybody was very friendly? Yes. And for your own individual life, wouldn't you like to enjoy by sporting, dancing, fighting also? Wouldn't you like to enjoy romance? Wouldn't you like to enjoy playing music? These are the ways we try to enjoy, but we fail. Yet when Krishna does these things, they have unlimited, infinite pleasure. We can't conceive of that. So Krishna comes to this world and displays his pastimes to attract our attention away from the world of matter. We think we're so important. We're so puffed up and proud. My activities are practical. I'm a practical man. I'm a practical lady. There's things we've got to solve. The rent has to be paid. Food has to be on the table. What will hearing about Krishna do for that? You guys are lost in a dream world. You run around all day trying to do so many things, and in the evening you're satisfied just by sitting on the floor and hearing about Krishna? So who is actually practical? Simply concerned with your rent and your food? That is animal life. Human life means to be concerned with the supreme enjoyer. And you won't become peaceful in your life until you actually understand that Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. Simply understanding God as creator or maintainer or annihilator, that won't do it for you. Because you, in this material world, think your specialty is enjoyment. And you have hope in the future that, although I'm not enjoying now, in the future I will enjoy. I'm so good. But when you hear about Krishna, real humility begins to dawn. You understand, I can never compete with Krishna. Let me serve him. But you'll never think that way without hearing about Krishna, without knowing something about Krishna. The activities and qualities of the original person, the source of everything, the source of all matter, the source of all spirit. Now, we've explained before, but it's always good to repeat. The Vedic standard is that repetition of something important is not a fault. Krishna's pastimes, his lila, they are easy to appreciate for one reason, and they're also difficult to appreciate for one reason. Now, Krishna's pastimes are easy to appreciate because they resemble human affairs. But those same pastimes are difficult to appreciate because, once again, they resemble human affairs. Because they resemble human affairs, we become attracted. Oh, yes, this is a little bit like us, but so infinitely, unlimitedly sweet. On the other hand, because Krishna's activities resemble human affairs, we think, ah, nothing special, it's just like us. Therefore, it is essential to hear about Krishna from the proper source. Otherwise, you'll become bewildered. Right in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, avajanati mamhudha. Fools, they think that I'm just an ordinary person. They don't understand my supreme dominion over everything. Fools think that I've accepted a material body. They don't understand I appear in this world in my perfectly pure transcendental form. Krishna's body is not composed of material elements. It is composed of Satchidananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And what are our bodies composed of? Ignorance, temporariness, and misery. Therefore, the best thing we can do is to learn about Krishna. But we run in the opposite direction because we're so busy. I have so many things to do. I want to travel. But you've been traveling so long from one body to another. You've been on different planets before, in different species. Now that you have the human form of life, just sit still and learn about Krishna. That is the rarest achievement, the most precious jewel. Otherwise, what is the most valuable thing you could do with your life? Danielle, if I ask you, what's the most valuable thing you can do with your life? What will you say? And don't give a stock answer. Give it. Based on where you're at now, what would you say? Huh? Or while you're thinking, we'll ask Graham, what would be the most valuable thing you feel you could do with your life right now? Learn about Krishna. Any other volunteers? Yes, what would be the most valuable thing? Huh?
Live totally in joy and bliss.
Live totally in joy and bliss. And how are you going to do that? Huh?
That's a big question. I mean, about it. philosophers have got one there, yes, one's divinity.
One's divinity. What does that mean, one's divinity?
It says itself, one's divineness.
But are you everything? You are everything? Oh, but are you everything? No. That means you're part of something, right? So what is it you are part of? You are the divine part of something divine. So what is the nature? What is the identity of the divine that you are part of? That you have to find out. Then there can be bliss. But if you forget what you are part of, how can there be bliss? There'll simply be confusion, dislocation. You're like an amputated limb if you forget what you're part of. So the most futile thing we can do with our life is to try to be happy without understanding the complete whole that we are part of. Hearing about Krishna means hearing about the whole that includes us. By hearing about Krishna, you understand we are just imitating Krishna in this world. We're trying to be happy with family, friends, lovers. We're trying to be happy with our hobbies, with our pursuits. All that struggle can be minimized just by hearing about Krishna's pleasure. Now, usually we don't like to hear about someone else's pleasure. We want to hear about our own pleasure. How can it be that we are perfectly satisfied just by hearing about Krishna's enjoyable activities? This is the great mystery. So, we'll read a little bit about Krishna. A short one. How about Krishna killing the bull demon, Aristasura? Please appreciate the finesse by which Krishna did this. The artistry. Don't miss it. Where would that be? Kamsa sends Akura. It's right before there. First, we'll hear about Krishna's personal neighborhood, Vrindavan. You like hearing about Vrindavan? I asked him, when you go back to India, will you miss the wonderful life in the West? He said he will not miss it so much. I said, what about the luxuries, the conveniences? He was not very attracted to that. He wants to go back to Vrindavan, the replica of Krishna's private abode. And then he will go to Mayapur, the spiritual abode of Lord Chaitanya. Vrindavan was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Everyone remembered his pastimes and was constantly merged in the ocean of transcendental bliss. But the material world is so contaminated that even in Vrindavan, the asuras, or demons, try to disturb the peaceful situation. Now bear in mind that although the demons think that they're disturbing Krishna, it's all pleasure. So don't think that they're ruining Krishna's good time. No. They have one motive, and for Krishna, it's all just part of the fun. Once a demon named Aristasura entered the village in the form of a great bull with a gigantic body and huge horns, digging up the earth with his hooves. try to understand that these demons had abilities to, they were wizards, they could change their bodily form into whatever they desired. As we discussed at the retreat earlier this year, this is what UFO experts call shape-shifting. They notice that the aliens have the ability to change forms into whatever they like. So this is nothing new from the Vedic point of view. These demons sent by the terrorist dictator king Kamsa, they had that kind of ability. So Arastasura is in the form of a great bull. When the demon entered Vrindavan, the whole land appeared to tremble as if there were an earthquake. He roared fiercely, and after digging up the earth on the riverside, he entered the village proper. The fearful roaring of the bull was so piercing that some of the pregnant cows and women had miscarriages. The bull's body was so big, stout, and strong that a cloud hovered over its body, just as clouds hover over mountains. You're always getting the graphic picture. I'm always telling everyone how Krishna book is full of sights, sounds, smells, and sensations. You should start to watch for that when you read Krishna book. They're not just dead words on the page. You're getting the full experience of the spiritual world. You're getting things to taste, things to see, things to hear, things to feel. Line after line of Krishna book is full of transcendental sense objects. And gradually, your memory of Krishna and the spiritual world becomes awakened by these descriptions. So, there's always a picture being painted for you. There's always fragrances in the air. There's always sensations. There's always things to hear. That is Krishna's book, full of transcendental sense objects. Without experiencing the transcendental sense objects, you won't give up the material sense objects. And that's what's troubling you. I was discussing with someone here. What's troubling you? What is stopping your progress in Krishna consciousness? Why won't you do it? The answer is that I think there is value in sense objects made of matter. And I don't have any awareness of the spiritual sense objects. Krishna consciousness is for more than just relief from material existence. It's nice that you come here for some peace and some shelter and some relief. But that's the bare minimum of what goes on here. Beyond that, you are getting entrance to the world of spiritual sense objects. You're dealing with spiritual sights, spiritual sounds, spiritual fragrances, spiritual sensations. Therefore, you're hearing about Arastasura, how he's so big and strong that a cloud is hovering over his body, just like clouds hover over mountains. You can see that. What a huge bull. Arastasura entered Vrindavan with such a fearful appearance that just on seeing this great demon, all the men and women were afflicted with great fear, and the cows and other animals fled the village. The situation became very terrible, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to cry, "Krishna, Krishna, please save us!" Krishna also saw that the cows were running away, and he immediately replied, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid." Now please don't think that there's some kind of panic situation for Krishna. It's all enjoyment for him. He's enjoying rescuing his village mates. He's enjoying the danger. There's no question of any worry for Krishna. There's no question of any problem. He's simply enjoying. He then appeared before Arastasura and said, "You lowest of living entities, why are you frightening the inhabitants of Gokula? What will you gain by this action? If you have come to challenge my authority, then I am prepared to fight you." In this way, Krishna challenged the demon. This is fun, you know? Wouldn't you like to say that to someone? You lowest of living entities. Why are you frightening the inhabitants of my neighborhood? What will you gain by this action? If you have come here to challenge my authority, then I'm prepared to fight you. You'd like to say that, but you won't. You can't. It's like with the bikey gangs. They like to talk like this. On my way to Perth, I was reading about your bikey gangs, the coffin cheaters. They're right here in Bayswater. I was reading in the newspaper. They had a big parade because one of their members evidently did not cheat the coffin. he was shot, in a drive-by shooting. So they had a big parade of 200 coffin cheaters on their motorcycles and like that. So I was reading this even coming from Japan in the newspaper. So they liked that. Challenged. The whole problem was that supposedly the other Club D-Row, whatever it is, they had fired on the coffin cheaters some nights before, so the coffin cheaters had to strike back. Supposedly that's the way it was. So everyone likes this. But there's so many problems. But for Krishna, he can challenge and there's no problem. He's the actual controller. He's the master. Everything is his energy. And he's simply enjoying. You lowest of living entities, you've come here to fight me? All right. We can fight. And then what did he do? Demonstrating how cool and calm he is. In this way, Krishna challenged the demon, and the demon became very angry by the words of Krishna. So Krishna stood before the bull, resting his hand on the shoulder of a friend. In other words, just showing you, no worries, mate. He's just resting his hand on the shoulder of a friend right in front of the bull. Okay, I'm relaxing. What are you going to do about it? It's like, I don't know here in Perth, but when I was young going to school, sometimes young boys would fight. So if you wanted to pick a fight with a young boy, you'd go up to him and push him. And the young boy would look astonished. And you'd just say, well, what are you going to do about it? They do that here? Yeah. What are you going to do about it? You don't like it? What are you going to do about it? I pushed you. Now what are you going to do about it? It's like Krishna. He's doing like that. Okay, I challenge you to fight. You came here to fight? Okay, we'll fight. I'm not worried. I just got his one hand rested on the shoulder of his friend. No problem. What are you going to do? You're a bull? You going to charge me? So, this is Krishna. He's the supreme enjoyer. The bull proceeded toward Krishna in anger. Digging the earth with his hooves, Aristasura lifted his tail, and it appeared that clouds were hovering about the tail. His eyes were reddish and moving in anger. Pointing his horns at Krishna, he charged. He charged him just like the thunderbolt of Indra. Now you have to meditate on Krishna's techniques in dealing with the demon. Very artistic. Krishna immediately caught the bull's horns and tossed them away, just as a gigantic elephant repels a small inimical elephant. Wouldn't you like to do that? A huge bull charging you. The bull is so big, clouds are hovering around the tail of the bull. He aims his horns at you and charges it. And you just grab the huge bull's horns and flick them away. It's Krishna. He's enjoying like that. He enjoys dancing with his girlfriends. He enjoys killing demons. Everything belongs to Krishna. He can do what he likes. Although the demon was perspiring and appearing very tired, he took courage and got up. He's going to go one more time at Krishna. Again he charged Krishna with great force and anger. While rushing toward Krishna, he breathed very heavily. Krishna again caught his horns and immediately threw him to the ground, breaking his horns. A bit of a variation this time. Caught him by the horns and threw him to the ground, but he also broke his horns off. Then, what did Krishna do? He stomped him. Krishna then began to kick his body just as one squeezes a wet cloth on the ground. This is something you see in India. You don't see it here in Australia, that when people are doing laundry, they get some wet cloth and they put it on rocks by the side of the river and they squeeze it by stepping on it with their feet. So that's how laundry is done. So Krishna is doing that to the bull. He's kicking the bull's body just like you squeeze a wet cloth on the ground. This is like the greatest insult. Also, when I was a young boy, if boys were fighting, first they would start fighting with the fists, and then if one boy went down on the ground, the ultimate insult was for the other boy to just start kicking him, stomping him. Do they do that here too? Yeah, yeah. And all the other little boys crowd around and say, "Oh, look, he's stomping him, he's kicking him." So the ultimate insult was once you beat him with your fists and the guy falls on the ground, then you jump on top of him and you start kicking him. That's not considered fair, but it's what everybody wants to see. So Krishna, he's doing that. The bull is on the ground, broken horns, and Krishna is just stomping him into the ground like a wet cloth. No mercy. It's fun. You couldn't get away with that, though. But for Krishna, everything is his energy. He can do that. And here we are enjoying Krishna stomping someone into the ground. Does that mean we're sadists? Does that mean we're some kind of violent persons? No. By hearing about Krishna stomping a demon into the ground, you are participating in the most spiritual activity. How can that be? What do you think? Is that possible? Now, it doesn't sound spiritual to you, does it? Krishna is spiritual. Whatever he does is spiritual. We cannot apply our standards to Krishna. Everything is his. Arastasura rolled over and began to move his legs violently, bleeding from the mouth and passing stool and urine. I think it's very graphic in the Krishna book. Full description. Meditate on this now. Bleeding from the mouth, passing stool and urine, his eyes starting from their sockets, he passed to the kingdom of death. This is better than television. The demigods in the celestial planets showered flowers on Krishna for his wonderful achievements. This is a universal event, so the chiefs of the higher planets, they're throwing flowers down on the Earth planet for Krishna, congratulating him in his artistic display of kicking the demon to death. Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and after killing this demon in the shape of a bull, he became the cynosure of all eyes. That means the center of attraction of all eyes. With Balaram, he triumphantly entered Vrindavan, and the inhabitants glorified him in Balaram with great jubilation. When a person performs some wonderful feat, his kinsmen and relatives and friends naturally become jubilant. Day after day, demons, they would attack Vrindavan. They actually served just as different amusements for Krishna. There was never any danger for Krishna. They also served to change the scene. Krishna would be playing with his cowherd boyfriends one way, and then a demon would attack, and they'd have to stop, and Krishna would kill the demon, and then Krishna would go back to playing with his friends another way. So in this way, the demons and their attacks were serving as scene changers. Everything was working so perfectly for Krishna's pleasure. You couldn't say that. You're trying to enjoy in your house, and someone breaks in and tries to rob you, and you subdue the person, and you solve the problem, and then you go back to your activities in the house. You can't say, "Oh, this was a very nice scene change." No, you'd be terrified. I remember once, I'll tell you a story. I was preaching in Eastern Europe in the communist days in Hungary. So, as a devotee and I, we were at a house, a farmhouse, and we were having a Krishna conscious program like now. And in the midst of the program, you could look out right out the window and see the police drive right up in front. So, everyone jumped, police! So we had to do some quick thinking. There everyone was in their devotee clothes, and the police are on their way into the house. So the first thing we had to do, of course, was get rid of the foreigners, because that's the illegal thing. That's the thing that will get everybody else in trouble. Even though the other Hungarian devotees, they were wearing devotional clothes, still they were locals, so somehow they could talk their way out of it. But with foreigners there, forget it. The two Americans there, no way. So the Americans had to escape somehow. So the police are walking up the walk to the farmhouse to come in, you know. There's only one thing to do. Jump out the window. So we did that, right from the middle of the lecture, we went, jumping out the window. It was about, 3 meters to the ground. And then we had to crawl through the garden and crawl over a fence and hide in a cornfield. The sun's beating down on you, the bugs are biting you, and you can look through the window. It's noted down their book, local people wearing suspicious clothes. And so they noted that in their book and they left. So then we came crawling out of the cornfield, covered with sweat and mud, and we rejoin the devotees, and they're all saying, "Oh, how transcendental! This is Krishna's mercy! How glorious!" And the devotee and I looked at one another and said, "Let's just get out of here real quick." Because we couldn't be sure what the police were going to do. The police were very expert. So we knew that the best thing is to immediately jump in a car and gun for the border. And we knew it would take 2.5 hours to reach the border, so we had 2.5 hours before the police could figure out something and send word to the border to stop anybody who looked like this and that. So while the devotees are saying, "Oh, how transcendental, how blissful, Krishna's mercy," let's get out of here. So I remember we just jumped in the car and we were, down at the bottom of the car, on the floor of the car, and the driver, the devotees, gunning the car, and so then we went to where our car was parked and just went straight for the border. The object is get to the border before any signal is sent to the border that stop these people, don't let them out of the country. So this example of they were thinking how transcendental, how what an ecstatic pastime. We're thinking, "Oh, this is too much, let's get out of here." For Krishna, it's not like that. Everything works for Krishna's pleasure. So you name your favorite activity and you'll find Krishna defeats you doing it. Whatever your favorite activity is. Romance, you can't compete with Krishna. Music, you can't compete. In the middle of the night, Krishna plays his flute, and the most beautiful women in the universe come. They don't have material bodies, they have spiritual bodies. Now what happens when you play your flute at midnight? Who comes? Try it, see. Go outside into a meadow and play your flute at midnight and see who comes. But when Krishna does it, the most beautiful non-material women in the universe come. And what happens when they reach Krishna? I'm waiting desperately for you. No. He just, "What are you doing here? Did you come to look at the forest? Don't you have better things to do? Don't you know your husbands and your relatives are looking for you? Why are you here?" Now you've seen the forest, you can go home. So Krishna is showing he's also enjoying being renounced. The most beautiful women. We cannot conceive of the spiritual beauty of the gopis. They're coming to Krishna in the dead of the night. And he's so detached. He said, "Oh, you want something? What are you doing here? Oh, you should go back home." We're so... We're so ridiculous that if some half-ugly creature with a body of matter comes towards us in the middle of the night, we're so happy. "Oh, what are you doing here?" But Krishna is perfect and complete. So much so that the most beautiful spiritual bodies can come and he's detached. That is Krishna's musical ability. So how can you compete with Krishna? You can't compete with him as a baby. His baby pastimes are incomparable. You can't compete with him in fighting, in sporting. You can't compete with him in talking. Therefore, it's best simply to hear about Krishna and glorify him. And in that way, you'll revive your spiritual body. And you won't take another birth again. So any questions? What do you think? Can this really be spiritual? Krishna killing the bull and stomping the bull so his eyes jump from the sockets and he passes stool and urine simultaneously. Can that really be spiritual? What do you think, Daniel? Huh? Maybe, huh? Our little activities we're eager to call spiritual. But Krishna we have doubts about. Anything we do is special, but Krishna's activities we think those are mythological. This is our problem. Yes. How do you stomp somebody? You jump on top and you just kick them. What's the difficulty? No! What do you mean too little? Krishna has unlimited strength. You're thinking Krishna has limited strength? His kicking, you cannot conceive of how powerful his kicking is. Why just his kicking? The bull charged him, this huge bull, and Krishna grabbed the bull by the horns, just threw him on the ground. It's fun. Anything else? Yes. Why are they inconceivable? No, the Western mind is so small. So many native Aborigine people know about witches and sorcerers who can change their form. What's the big deal? The Western mind is tiny. Don't say it's all humanity is like that. It's just a tiny section of humanity in Europe and America and countries like that. Where you talk to the natives in Indonesia, you talk to the Aborigines, they know all about it. How wizards and sorcerers can change their form, how witches can fly on twigs, they know all these things. You talk to the UFO specialists, they'll tell you about how the aliens can change shapes. Keep on hearing, yes. Well, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's further analysis. We're just sticking with Krishna book tonight. We can deal with that. That'll be very nice. Yes. This universe is full of entities, some good and some bad. That you can learn from the Vedic literature. Based on what these people who contact aliens, what they say the aliens say, it doesn't sound like they're in contact with very elevated beings. The residents of the higher planets, they do not reveal themselves to people on Earth in this day and age because the people on Earth are so unqualified. So these entities that are supposed to be using these UFOs, this is very gross technology. It's considered low class according to the Vedic standard. The demigods don't utilize such gross mechanical technology. You get the full universal perspective in the Vedic literature. So as I was explaining to this devotee here, Western society is unique in the world in thinking that it's alone in the universe, that only human beings exist on Earth, that only life is on Earth. This is a very unique belief. Natives, whether they're Native Americans or natives from Africa, they all have some understanding that there's all sorts of subtle things going on in the universe. But only the so-called advanced Westerners think that, you know, we are the only intelligent life in the universe. This is crazy. So the greatest upset for Western knowledge as it is will be when people have to cope with extraterrestrial life, really. Christianity can't cope with it. The universities can't cope with it. The scientists can't cope with it. But the Vedas easily handle this. It's not even considered anything special. What is special is Krishna, who's beyond the cosmos. Anything else? So it's such a great luxury to hear about Krishna before you take rest. This is how it was in the village life in India. Srila Prabhupada would describe how after a day's work in the fields, the family would go to some central place and hear about Krishna's pastimes or Lord Ramchandra's pastimes. And then when that was over, they would walk back home a couple of kilometers. And on the way home, they would discuss about Krishna's activities, what they heard. And by the time they got home, they'd be ready to take rest, and they would dream about what they had heard. And that way, life is so nice. Yes? What happens if you touch fire and don't know it about its burning ability? Does the fire say, oh, I won't burn you? You don't know? Mm-hmm. So if you hear about Krishna, even though you don't know anything about Krishna, you'll still benefit. That's why we do Harinam parties. We go out chanting. Who is it? Yes. What is your name again?
Yuri.
He's visiting from Holland. He was working, passing out raffle tickets or something like that. And the chanting party goes by, and he said, I felt so happy all of a sudden. What is this? And then a month later, he saw another chanting party, and this time he decided to follow behind. So he didn't know what was going on, did you? He didn't know. He didn't have a clue. But he just heard and became affected. So, the potency worked. Now, it's best that you are fully conscious of what's happening. But still, even if you're not aware, the effect is there. The potency of the holy name acts. But our whole process is to become Krishna conscious, to be conscious of Krishna. But even if you're not conscious, and still you're in the presence of the holy name, or hearing about Krishna, the effect will be there. The scriptures say that if you go to a spot where the chanting party has passed by, even though the chanting party is gone, still you get purifying effect. And it was here in Australia that Srila Prabhupada said, for all our book distributors and future book distributors here at Transcendentalist, Prabhupada said right here in Australia, if the people just take the book in their hand and appreciate, oh, it's very nice, and that's all they do, that's enough to give them the human form of life, the next verse. So everything about Krishna is so special. Yes. By us using the sidewalk, we are benefiting the city. Otherwise, the place is useless. If the devotees didn't walk upon the sidewalk, what would be the point of the sidewalk? Because the devotees are walking on the sidewalk, the city has some value. Anything else? I'd like to read more about Krishna, but it's getting late. Or not? A little more? You don't have to go? Anyone has to go? Don't feel bad if you have to go. You have to go? Yes? Yes, that's all right. You must tend to your household responsibilities. Let's see. What shall we hear about? A short one.
Is it possible we have a picture here of another instance of force?
I'm looking in this volume here for something short. Devouring the forest fire. This is about Krishna swallowing fire. While Krishna and Balaram and their friends were engaged in the pastimes described above, the cows, being unobserved, began to wander off on their own, entering farther and farther into the deepest part of the forest, allured by fresh grasses. The goats, cows, and buffalo traveled from one forest to another, and entered the forest known as Ishikatavi. This forest was full of green grass, and therefore they were allured. But when they entered, they saw that there was a forest fire, and they began to cry. On the other side, Balaram and Krishna, along with their friends, could not find their animals, and they became very aggrieved. What? Krishna became aggrieved? I thought he was transcendental. Yes, this becoming aggrieved by Krishna and Balaram is another way of enjoying. Krishna is so perfect and complete that he not only enjoys pleasure, but he also enjoys pain. It's all the same. In other words, pain is just a different way of enjoying. It's all part of the varieties of enjoyment. So Krishna being aggrieved, his being aggrieved is just transcendental ecstasy for him. The spiritual world is like that. Non-dual. When you say that the spiritual world is beyond dualities, that means that both pain and pleasure have the same effect. Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna and Balaram began to trace the cows by following their footprints, as well as the path of eaten grass. All the boys were fearing that their very means of livelihood, the cows, were now lost. When searching out the cows in the forest, they themselves were very tired and thirsty. Soon, however, they heard the crying of their cows. Krishna began to call the cows by their respective names with great noise. Upon hearing Krishna calling, The cows immediately replied with joy. But by this time, the forest fire had surrounded all of them, and the situation appeared to be very fearful. The flames increased as the wind blew very quickly, and it appeared that everything movable and immovable would be devoured. All the cows and boys became very frightened, and they looked toward Balaram and Krishna the way a dying man looks at the picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They said, "My dear Krishna, my dear Krishna, you and Balaram are very powerful. We are now burning from the heat of this blazing fire. Let us take shelter at your lotus feet. We know you can protect us from this great danger. Our dear friend Krishna, we are your intimate friends. It is not right that we should suffer in this way. We are all completely dependent on you, and you are the knower of all religious life. We do not know anyone except you." The Personality of Godhead heard the appealing voices of his friends, and casting a pleasing glance over them, he began to answer. By speaking through his eyes, he impressed upon his friends that there was no cause for fear. Now, what is this about Krishna speaking through his eyes? That's not what this means. Krishna, any limb of his body can do the functions of any other limb. No one in India can do that. Angani yasya sakalendya vrittimanti govindamadi purusham tamahamadami. Krishna can speak with his eyes. He can see with his ears. He can eat with his feet. Any limb of his body can do the functions of any other part. So he's actually speaking through his eyes. It's not like a poetic statement. By speaking through his eyes, he impressed upon his friends that there was no cause for fear. And he assured them, "Don't worry." Then Krishna, the supreme mystic, the powerful personality of Godhead, immediately swallowed up all the flames of the fire. The cows and boys were thus saved from imminent danger. Out of fear, the boys were almost unconscious. But when they regained their consciousness and opened their eyes, they saw that they were again in the Bandira forest with Krishna, Balaram, and the cows. You have been to the Bandira forest? They were astonished to see that they were completely free from the attack of the blazing fire, and that the cows were saved. They secretly thought that Krishna must not be an ordinary boy, but must be some demigod. In the evening, Krishna and Balaram, along with the boys and cows, returned to Vrindavan, playing their flutes. As they approached the village, all the gopis became very joyous. Throughout the day, the gopis used to think of Krishna while he was in the forest, and in his absence, they were considering one moment to be like 12 years. This is the test that you actually have love of God. People, they used to go to church and say, "We want to love God." But it's just some kind of official thing. They get no experience, no realization, no taste. How do you know that love of God is coming? That, indeed, one moment seems like 12 years. Lord Chaitanya has taught us like that. Govinda virahename. Without Govinda, without Krishna, everything is zero. Prabhupada was once describing this mood. "What do you mean everything is zero? Look around. Big city, so much is going on, traffic, this, that, the other, action everywhere. What do you mean? Nothing." But Lord Chaitanya says, "Nothing, zero. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam. The whole world empty. Because I'm feeling separation from Krishna." That is the symptom that there is love of God. Not just singing some hymns, giving some old clothes to the salvos. There must actually be that feeling of separation. Lord Chaitanya himself, what did he say? He's Krishna, coming as his own devotee to teach you what it's like to be a devotee? Lord Chaitanya said, if you see tears in my eyes, please understand it's only a show. Because if I actually had love of Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya is teaching us what is the standard of love of God. These deep feelings of separation. And that is the highest contribution of the Krishna conscious teachers. Just like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they never said, now we have caught Krishna, now we have him. They were always going all over Vrindavan. Hey Rod, hey Vrajadevike, hey Nanda, where is Krishna? Oh Queen of Vrindavan, where are you? They never thought, oh now we have Krishna, everything is all right. They never achieved Krishna in that way. They're always feeling separation from Krishna, and that's higher. Our sampradaya gives this highest goal, vipralamba seva, love of Krishna in separation. That's even more powerful than meeting Krishna. So the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were always searching. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? The gopis, you'll read in the Krishna book about their separation from Krishna. But actually, in that mood of separation, they had Krishna more than anyone. You know that Krishna left after the rasa dance. Krishna said, I cannot repay you. Even if I had the lifetime of Brahma, I cannot repay you for your service. You'll have to be satisfied just with your service. But Krishna indeed did pay them. How did he pay them back? By leaving them to give them the highest experience, love of Krishna in separation. And then he sent Uddhava back to Vrindavan from Mathura to tell them, to point out what was going on. All right, that's enough for tonight. All glories to Lord Prabhupada.